Even though Friday was unusually warm, I happened to be going past the local golf course, and I looked out there, and the grass was perfectly green. There wasn't any dead grass at all, and people were out there playing golf. I looked down at my calendar watch, and it said December 5th, and the temperature was in the 60s. This is about Christmas time, and if you're like most people, we're thinking about buying gifts, and sometimes that's a problem. A problem because sometimes you can't afford maybe what you like to give, and a problem because, well, you don't want to give to some people. And so we think about buying and giving so much at Christmas time, but I'd like to speak about the gift of the giver this morning. We read in John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that he gave." And so I think the key to that verse is that God gave. Now, when I receive gifts, well, you know, sometimes you like to receive things, and sometimes you don't like to receive things. We had an adult Christmas party last Friday night, and we gave gifts to one another. You wouldn't even like to receive some of the gifts that were given at that party. For one thing that was given was a large skull of a cow. You know, that was a true gift, a large skull of a cow. So we gave some valuable gifts like that to one another just for fun. But when we receive something, we usually like things that are useful. And perhaps if they're not useful, I'm not an antique buff myself because I've never seen too many antiques that are very useful. But perhaps we like them because of their value. We like things that are, perhaps a diamond is not useful, but it has some value. And then perhaps for you antique dealers or buyers, I should say, those that like antiques in their homes, perhaps you like them because of nostalgia or their beauty. And so when we get things, we look at them for their, perhaps their use, their value, and their beauty. Now John 3:16 says, "God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son." So God has given us a gift. And we would like to examine that gift this morning and to see about its usefulness and its value and its beauty. You know, one of the things that makes it difficult for us as Christians is to look at Christ in an objective way. Because there's so much sentimentality connected with especially Christmas time. You know, the sweet little baby Jesus and so forth. That it's really hard to look at Jesus in an objective fashion. But for just a few moments, we're going to try to look at Jesus in an objective way to get a point across. When we receive a gift from God in the person of Jesus Christ, we might look on this gift and see, well, say, does it have any, first of all, any perhaps beauty? Does it have any usefulness? Does it have any value? When we first look at this gift, as an objective gift, we might say, well, it doesn't really have too much attractiveness that we might want it or value it. And Isaiah told us this. He said in Isaiah, the 53rd chapter, verse 2, he says, "He shall grow up before him as a tender plant, and as a root out of a dry ground. He hath no form nor comeliness, and when we shall see him, there is no beauty that we should desire him." You know, if you were to look at Jesus Christ in a very objective way, we might see him in that way. A very common gift. He was born a very common individual. In fact, he would be considered a very low-class individual, born of very lowly parents without very many means at all. We know his birth is in a manger, and we know his parents had very little. He grew up to be a carpenter. He probably was, anyway. Most children learned the profession of their father. This was not considered a particularly high trade, a very lowly trade. And we also are told that he is given to us freely. You're like me, when I receive anything free, I say, well, what in the world are the strings attached? Well, it can't be worth too much. Now, if one of the local banks would say, if you would stop by, we're going to give everyone in the city of Dayton a free gift. Now, you would say, well, now, I'm not going to bother to even stop by. Because after all, it couldn't be worth too much if everyone in the whole city of Dayton were receiving this gift. So right away, you would probably reject it. Or not even bother to look into it. when we're told that Jesus Christ is given to us freely as a gift from God to the whole world, we might say, well, something that is given to the whole world can't be worth much. It has no value to us. It's a common, lowly gift. Well, we might go on further and say, well, what use is this gift to me? Can I do anything with it? Is it any value to me? Can it be useful to me? In John, the 6th chapter, in verse 58, we know that Jesus had attracted a following because of what he had done and his miracles and what they had seen of him they liked so far. But then Jesus began to change his tone of conversation. He began to change his method of preaching, in a sense. We read in John 6, verse 58, "This is that bread which came down from heaven. Not as your fathers did eat manna and are dead. He that eateth of this bread shall live forever." Now, it seems right offhand when you think about it a little bit, this seems to be nice. This is the bread which came down from heaven. If you eat this bread, you're going to live forever. What a wonderful gift God has given to us, to partake of this bread and live forever. But you know, the people knew what he was talking about. We do not understand his language, perhaps, here. But they knew when he said, when you partake of this bread, he was making demands. He was asking them to do something. Because we read on down in verse 60, "When Jesus knew in himself that his disciples murmured at it, he said unto them, Doth this offend you? Or are you bothered by what I say?" And then on in verse 66, "From that time many of his disciples went back and walked no more with him, because they knew that eating or partaking of Jesus Christ meant giving of themselves up. And this they were not willing to do." As a youngster, did you ever receive a piggy bank? Now, I don't know if I ever did. I've seen plenty of them, but they make them out of all kinds of animals. But now, there used to be piggy banks. Here's a little fat piggy standing there, and he's grinning at you. But there's one thing about piggy banks. He has a slot in the top of him. Mom and Dad gives you 50 cents for your allowance and says, "Now, don't forget, you're supposed to save some of that money and put them in the pig." So you receive this gift, and he just sits there grinning at you, wanting money all the time. And putting it in adult terms, perhaps your family has grown to the place where the sons and daughters old enough to drive, or maybe mom works, and you say, "Well, you can't get by in one car anymore, we've got to have another car." And you go out and you buy a used car, and you say, "Well, this is going to be fine, it's going to make it more convenient for our family, it's going to be a lot easier to get around, and we're not going to have to take people here and there." And lo and behold, you're looking for service, and while you start next week, it won't start. You have to have a new battery. The week after, we have to have a new brake, and it goes on and on. And this thing we thought was going to be so convenient for us is demanding, and we say it nickels and dimes us to death. And so it is, I think, a little bit like Jesus. He does offer some things, but yet the demands are so strong that people say, "No, I just don't want it." And so many refuse Jesus Christ because he doesn't seem to be very useful. Rather, he seems to be demanding. He seems to be wanting. He wants our time. He wants our allegiance. He wants our heart, our sincerity, and our dedication. And so people say, "No, this isn't useful to me. It's nothing but a burden." Well, we might say, is there some beauty? Do we like it? You know, is he like a diamond in the rough? When he's polished, can we find something beautiful about it? We look for this beauty and we see, what do we see? Well, really, not much. He was surrounded by people that were not very pleasant. A foul-mouthed, impetuous fisherman. A dishonest tax collector. A traitor. And we could go on down the list, and he was not very, very pleasant company. He was not a man of wealth. He didn't dress real well. He says he didn't even have any place to sleep. He says foxes have dens and birds have nests, but I don't even have anywhere to sleep. He didn't have a beautiful home. He had nothing, in a sense, from an objective viewpoint that would make us want him for his attractiveness. No position, no power, no wealth, no influential friends, nothing. in his life that will make us a bend package to him for what he had and what he did. Well, if we could examine Jesus Christ in this way, we might say, well, God, you can keep your gift because, you know, just like getting a moose head, I don't need it, you know. I don't want it in my house. And so many people have looked at Jesus Christ in that way and said, we do not want your gift, God, so keep him. But on the other hand, if we look beyond just the surface of Jesus Christ, we can see why God has given us so very, very much. Because, as I said, my sermon is entitled The Gift of the Giver. We receive Jesus Christ as a gift from God because of what he can do and give for us. You know, it's a little bit like Aladdin's lamp, the fairy tale. The lamp evidently didn't look like much on the outside, and one might just throw the lamp aside and say it's just a worthless piece of junk. But on the other hand, the lamp was a key to untold wealth and riches. And so is Jesus Christ. If you look at him just from the outside, it doesn't look like too much. But yet, if one really examines Jesus Christ and find out what God has done through him and what God has provided through him for us, we will see why Jesus has so much value, because Jesus is the one that gives so very, very much. His earthly life began by giving. We know his very first thing he did when he entered, in a sense, into his three-year ministry, was that he spent 40 days and nights fasting out in the desert to prepare himself to resist the devil. Not for himself, mind you, but for us. You see, the devil says, he took him up on the high mountain and said, well, if you worship me, I'll give you all this. Well, what did Jesus have to lose by doing that? Because his life wasn't lived for himself, it was lived for us. And since Jesus didn't reject, I don't think, Satan's offer so much for himself, but he knew that he could not save us unless he rejected Satan's offer. So he refused, and he went through this period of fasting and preparation, not for himself, but for our benefit. His first miracle of the changing of the water to wine was not one where he called attention to himself. It was not something fantastic. It was not something extraordinary in the sense that changing water to wine, one might say, big deal. But yet, when we think about why he did it evidently because he did not want to see the host embarrassed because they ran out of wine at a wedding feast. We are told that everywhere he went, he did not refuse to grant people's requests if they made it in sincerity and in faith. He raised three people from the dead. He constantly worked and wore himself out in a life of giving that went beyond what he really had to do. He became so exhausted that we're told in Luke the 5th chapter, he had to withdraw himself just to rest up. People thronged about him, and he never ceased to give. And those that were socially outcast, those that were unpleasant, the lepers where people would draw back away, Jesus touched them. The children, his apostles said, keep these children away. We have an important man. He has an important task, that we can be bothered by children. Jesus said, suffer them not, or allow them to come unto me. And he touched them and blessed them. Zacchaeus, the despised tax collector. No one would even allow Zacchaeus through the crowd. He evidently was short. They said, well, they wouldn't even allow him to go through the crowd to see Jesus. He had to climb into a tree. Jesus went to his house. People didn't like it too well, but Jesus loved and he gave of himself entirely. And he gave and he gave and he gave. Impetuous Peter, we might say, Peter, why don't you be quiet? Just shut up, Peter. You're all the time talking. You're impetuous. You're just not a very pleasant person. But Jesus, through his kindness, through his constant working with Peter, turned Peter to a man, a great man of God, and working for God. Jesus never did refuse to do a miracle. The Gentiles came to Jesus. And, you know, he was sent to the Jews, and he would say, tell them that. He would say, I don't have time to do this. I'm not sent to you. And they would persuade him, and through their faith and sincerity, he just couldn't turn them down. Jesus gave of himself the gift of the giver. Well, what does this have to do for you and I? After all, we didn't live 2,000 years ago. Is Jesus giving you and I anything today? He said in John the 14th chapter, I go and prepare a place for you. Jesus Christ today is preparing a place for you and I. I do not exactly know what that means. I've heard a lot of interpretation of that. But whatever it is, Jesus Christ is in heaven preparing a place before us. He is a mediator before God. And in that sense, he is preparing a place for us. We're told in Hebrews, the 7th chapter, that he is in heaven right today before God working on our behalf, as in a sense a lawyer would in a court before God. In Hebrews the 7th chapter, verse 25, it says, wherefore he is able to save them to the uttermost that come unto God by him. How is he doing it? Seeing he ever liveth to make intercession for him. He is before the great judge of the universe right now, this very hour, making intercession for your sins and mine. We also read about the same thing in the 9th chapter of Hebrews, verse 24. For Christ is not entered into the holy places made with hands, which are the figures of the true, but into heaven itself. And I don't think that's so much to the place, but up in the sky, or what we might think it is, but it represents the dwelling place of God. Wherever God is, he's entered through heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. On our behalf, there is Christ giving of himself as our intercessor before God. He's doing it for you and I. He is the source to all God's power. He says, if you ask anything of God, remember what he said, in my name, he will grant. He is the source through which our prayers go. We receive answered prayers because of the work of Jesus Christ in the throne before the throne of God today. He is also giving today an abundant life. In John 10:10, he says, I am come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly. Now, he didn't stop giving an abundant life when he left this earth. There are thousands of people today who are still receiving an abundant life. I interpret that to mean a rich life, a meaningful life, a full life, a life of purpose and value. I am come that you might have life and that you might have it more fully. He is still giving thousands of people that come to him in faith that abundant life. So how can we say that Jesus has no value? He may not outwardly have value, but my, how many people has he changed? How many lives has he touched? How many people has he influenced? How many broken homes have been healed? How many alcoholics have been reformed? And we can go on down the list. How many people's lives have been changed by this abundant life that Jesus Christ has given? And so Jesus does not cease to give. Just because he left this earth, he does not cease to give. He is still giving of himself to thousands and thousands of people. And finally, I believe Jesus will not cease to give, because he's got a lot of things waiting to give you and I. When he comes, he's going to give life to the believer. In John, or Hebrews, the 9th chapter, verse 28, we read, so Christ was once offered to bear the sins of many, and unto them to look for him, shall he appear the second time without sin unto salvation. He's coming again to give to us again, to give us eternal life, to give us a place in that kingdom, to give us a position in that kingdom, to give us work in that kingdom, to give us authority in that kingdom to rule and reign with him. He's going to keep on giving. And I can believe that Jesus Christ through eternity is going to keep on giving of himself to those who are living and dwelling with him. I don't know how he's going to be doing it, but I believe it's the nature of Jesus Christ to give, to not withhold from us. So I think throughout eternity, he's going to keep on giving to you and I. You know, it's a sad thing when we think about it. I was mentioned in class this morning about when people reject Christ sometimes, or ridicule him, and us maybe that represent Christ, what a sad thing this is. And it is a rather sad thing to see so many people reject this wonderful gift, because Christ has so much to offer. You know, I think it's comparable to a person. Let's say that you went out and bought, maybe you don't think you should, but let's say someone persuaded you to go out to buy a 50-cent lottery ticket. I've never myself, I think it's the biggest waste of money that could ever happen to any person. I can use that 50 cents better than someone else in the state of Ohio can, but suppose you did, and you went with one 50 cent ticket, you became this grand winner, what they call it, and you won $1 million. And so someone came around to you and they said, well, we got $1 million, all you have to do is appear on TV, and you know, on that show, and they give that money away to you, and boy, you got it made. You're on an easy street the rest of your life. And you think about it a little bit and say, no, I don't want the money. And they say, well, why wouldn't you want $1 million? Well, you say, you think about it a little bit, and say, well, think of all the tax I would have to pay on $1 million. And not only that, when I win this $1 million, you know what's going to happen. All my relatives are going to show up. They're going to want to borrow money. And not only that, people are going to be taking advantage of me, door-to-door salesmen. I'm going to be calling them phones. They're going to want to sell me aluminum siding. They want to sell me this and that and the other, encyclopedias, and I'll be just being tested to death. You're teaching $1 million. I don't want it. Now, you know, we might say this person's rather foolish, but yet we can sympathize with him. Because there are some obligations that come with being a millionaire. And so it is the same way with Jesus Christ. God has given us a wonderful, valuable gift in this one whom he called his son. But yet there are obligations. He demands our heart. He demands our allegiance. He demands some time. He demands some sacrifice. He wants us totally committed to him. But well, how much more can he give? And so evidently so many people have thought about this and said, I don't want your gift, Lord, because there are just too many things attached. But I believe that they would really look into the situation, would really examine what God has given to us. They can see that we can never outgive. We can never outdo God. Yes, we may pay some prices in terms of what we may give up for our time and our dedication, but my, how much more have we received? It's been said that you can't outgive God. I don't think that means just in money. There's no way you can give God more of your time, more of your love, and he's going to give more back to you. It's just an unbalanced situation. God has given to us something that we can never return. No matter how much dedication or love or time we may give him, we can never give it back.